Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. The new show just launched Monday and gets simulcast at 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. All hours of the show get podcasted, so be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin now, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, college students heading back on campus. What could possibly go wrong? Also, we'll talk about the football team in Washington hiring a new team president and your awful stories about your awful roommates who probably thought you were awful too. But first, all right, playoffs have begun. I got to say, it's really getting in the way of my yoga. Like, I can't speak for anybody else, right? Like, this is a thing for me. I like to do my yoga at night. I like to unwind at the end and then lay it down. I had gotten accustomed to there being no sports for me to watch at night. Now, all of a sudden, the NBA playoffs are here, and I don't know about you, but I myself am not quite in playoff shape. I have not gotten myself built up to being ready for all this playoff basketball. I appreciate that we're not going to have any of the super late games anymore, right? Like, the late games seem to be starting at 9 o'clock. That's cool. I appreciate that. But, I mean, I'm not there yet. Gabe, are you ready yet? Like, I'm just not in the physical condition to really do this like I want.
Not in the physical condition to be sitting at your TV and watching?
It's not just watching, Gabe. I'm trying to provide insight for the people when I go on the air, so I need to pay a different level of attention and see what it is that's going on. Yes, damn it, I need to get into physical shape in order to get this going, man. Come on, man. You try to act like you don't wind up worn out during the NBA playoffs. Like, every year, the NBA playoffs typically wear me out, but I get to build up a little bit, get myself toward it. Next thing I know, I looked up and it was the playoffs.
You are right. By the end of the playoffs, I am quite worn out because it's the same deal every night, getting juiced up for a game. And then it's like, oh, time to go to bed.
And like, again, I ain't really got to stay up. Like, we don't have to do the super stay up late anymore. Like, that's a big win. It was great to have Monday just all day of basketball, man. All day. Though that kind of got in my way because I had a quasi day off from work. So I decided to use that day to clean up the house. And so I couldn't really like pay attention to the basketball. Like, yo, man, it's just all come at me at one time. I've established new patterns in my life. I've developed new ways that I go about doing things. And now I got to try to integrate those new things in with maybe my favorite time of year, the basketball playoffs, at a time of year where I'm not accustomed to it being the basketball playoffs. And now here we are. But it's great. They're back. I'm here for it. I'm very here for basketball playoffs. Here's one thing I want to ask people, though, about the playoffs being back. I'm just curious if anybody else is feeling this. It don't feel like the playoffs, though. Like, there's no atmosphere. They can't really recreate the atmosphere, but it doesn't really feel like the playoffs. Like, it's getting down late in the games. We have, like, none of the crowd cues and all of that stuff that we typically take from these situations. We don't have them right now. Like, we know these are the playoffs, but they look about exactly the same as them games they were just playing to wrap up the regular season. And I ain't even know what those really counted for. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different. You're going to have to like suspend some disbelief to really buy into the idea that these are the playoffs, at least in these early rounds. That's what it's going to take from us.
How much of that is due to the absence of a definitive playoffs jingle?
Had not thought of this.
The one with Pitbull playoffs.
Yeah, but on the other side, though, like, we're getting Issa Rae. She out here telling people awkwardly to get ready for the playoffs. I guess they decided that she was going to be. We went all the way in on Black Lives Matter when they started making these decisions, and they decided to call Issa Rae to be the playoff hype man. Samuel L. Jackson must have been charging too much money. Like, I need a little more energy. I need to feel it, baby. And I just don't quite feel it yet. Like, maybe we'll feel it later. And I think we're going to feel it more and more as these rounds go on, because it's getting chippy out there already. already. Did you see the thing where Marcus Smart had to go have a little word with Joel Embiid and explain to him what he was not going to tolerate? Did you see that? Right. But see, a lot of those things just kind of push through. Not really slide. Like, we would have seen that it happened. But with distraction in the crowd and stuff like that, those things just kind of blend. Now they just kind of jump off the screen. You know, like, that's a whole different sort of ball game that we got. Also, shout out to Sixers fans. Gabe, I don't know if you saw this, but Brett Brown said after the game that he was not going to surround Embiid with four shooters because it would make them too easy to defend.
And what did they do in the late game situation? They had on the floor Josh Richardson, Alec Burks,
yes,
still in the league, Matisse Thybulle, I don't know.
No, I would not.
And then fourth person on the floor was someone who I can't even remember his name.
Was it Al Horford?
Horford went out injured.
Oh, wow, that sounds about right.
Just four dudes on the floor and Embiid. And the Celtics closed the game on like a 10-0 run or something.
No, like you might want to get like more guys out there that can shoot, buddy. Like that's just what I think. But don't worry, Sixers fans. Three more losses and you'll get a new coach. Like that right there is your out of here line. I mean, yeah, I would do something that seems obvious would work to everybody else on earth, but not me. That would make us too easy to defend. How does that make you too easy to defend? I just want to know. Also, by the way, speaking of that game, I mentioned this on the tweets. Al Horford is getting that yarmulke in the back.
What?
He the new Ginobili. He developing that yarmulke in the back.
Oh,
yeah, man.
He
getting
God.
That attack from the rear flank. I had some people tell me that I'm no longer allowed to joke about these things because now, you know, I have hair. And to which I say, having hair never stopped anybody from joking on me. Like, when did this happen? You know what I'm saying? Like, all of a sudden now, I'm a man without a country. You got to be honest about this. Anybody I ever told to come on home needed to come on home. When I needed to come on home, I needed to come on home. The only reason I was able to leave home is because I was able to go away for like 3 months while I worked it out before I came back and showed y'all what it was. But if I hadn't been wearing that hat on TV for 3 months, y'all would have been clowning me the whole way. Y'all would have never noticed that all of a sudden I had grown out this luxurious mane. You wouldn't have had no opportunity to do that because you'd have been too caught on all the jokes that y'all was telling. You know what I'm saying? They mad at me, Gabe. A lot of them, they're not pleased.
Look,
I ain't out here clowning nobody for being in the place. You know what I'm saying? And if you in a situation where you can make a triumphant return, I recommend that you give it a try. And if you give it a try and if you make it work, I'm here for you, baby. I'm on your squad. I'm on your team. All I notice is I put up some pictures. You see, I don't know if you saw them the other day, Gabe, but I put up some pictures my brother took. I went and put on a dashiki and got the Afro pick and walked around Harlem and took some photographs. A lot of hate coming from the cats with the struggling hairlines. I am a man with a struggling hairline. Maybe you can make it work. Maybe you can't. If I can make it work and you can't make it work, this just says something that we've all known for a long time. Me and you are not the same. That's the whole reason you listen to this. It's because me and you are not the same. This is aspirational podcasting here. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to give y'all a little something to strive to. Work in spite of your limitations. I'm a skinny man, but I've been out here working out. You know what I'm saying? Putting up a little weight, doing a little yoga. In fact, Gabe, I'm going to tell the people something that's going to shock them. Right? So I went and hung out with a buddy of mine a couple weekends ago. He got a spot in the Hamptons. Right? So me and my brother rolled out there, decided we want to try to like do some photographs. You know what I'm saying? Figured it'd be a nice little environs. I got myself some, you know, put on a little preppy-ish gear, put on a salmon color polo. I had some fancy like joggers that I had to buy in order to go to the U.S. Open because they told me that I had to dress a certain way in order to sit in the section I was in. You know, got my J's right. You know, took a couple pictures, looking pretty good out there. And then while I was in the pool, my brother's like, yo, I get a couple pictures of you here, but you know me, I ain't really just out here taking pictures with no shirt on and stuff like that, but I ain't gonna lie. I looked at them. This is 40, baby. Hashtag, this is 40. It ain't bad. Got a little muscular definition for y'all. You know what I'm saying? I got that. That's what we doing. You know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to step my little situation up, and I'm just here to tell y'all to do the same.
Quarantine life, man, got you changed.
I'm the same dude, man. I just look better. That's all, you know, that's all it comes down to, man. I turn 40 years old next week, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I got, you know, I'm trying to I'm trying to get myself to the places that I need to be. Just trying to improve a little bit. But this is going to be good. I'm here. I am enjoying the fact that we have basketball playoffs. I wonder this, though. Do people know it's the playoffs? And I ask that just because everything is so far off rhythm, right? Like, not, like we're not in a normal pace on anything that we're doing. And so they came back. They got the games back on. They got it rolling. But like, I wonder how many people know that it's the playoffs. I wonder how many people know like anything's going on. Let me ask you this. Did you know that the Democratic National Convention started this week? I only knew because I saw the tweets after Michelle Obama had started talking. I had no idea. I'm not particularly interested in watching it or anything like that. But I had no idea. But this is like, this is when that happens, right? Like, this is the time of year when that goes down. But everything is just so off rhythm that I don't think about it in that way. And so I wonder, like, I think people kind of sort of know that the basketball playoffs are going on right now. But they like, you know, getting their kids ready for their doomed school adventures and everything else. You know what I mean? I just don't think that people really are quite in the swing. I don't know how long it'll take for people to like really get in the swing and appreciate that this is going on right now. Ether Stiles, when I mentioned this briefly, wrote a story about like the drop in ratings that the NBA has suffered in the last few years. My contention, by the way, is that the worst thing that ever happened to NBA ratings in the regular season was the 2016 Warriors. Because you think about it, we have 4 years where we were on it because of the Heat. There's never been a more interesting day-to-day basketball story, not in my lifetime, than the LeBron era Heat, right? We had 4 years of that, and then we had this out-of-nowhere Warriors juggernaut, and then they're going 73-9. We watched that. Like, that was all over the place on TV when that happened. And then them dudes ain't win a championship. And then they got Kevin Durant. Like, that rendered for so many people moot the regular season. Like, it just completely flipped up, though, I think, the way that a lot of people viewed the regular season. And I don't think we've quite recovered. Like, you could talk about that load management stuff. How much load management, like, actually takes place? Like, when you go look at this, it's not like Giannis is out here playing 55 games or something like that. You know, like, most of these dudes are playing the games. It's a couple big names that jump out here, and they did have that run where this was happening. All the nationally televised games, all of a sudden, teams were pulling players out. Like, that was a problem and certainly bad for the bottom line. But I don't know. Like, and I know this year ain't going to do nothing to help anybody in terms of getting people to watch, because this is just not the time generally when people watch NBA basketball. This is not the time where people get like super juiced up about it. Like, I think we've moved past that point where people were simply excited about there being sports at all on television. You know, I think baseball fans, because the nature of being a baseball fan is just to ride or die with your team every day, right? Like, once that starts, you go ahead and you start doing that. Basketball requires you to be a bit more nimble, right? It requires you to be a bit more flexible. The playoffs kind of, you know, make things a bit more regular, but that's just kind of what is required. And I want to see like how long it takes, or if people like really get up to speed in this, because I think the West playoffs are going to be fascinating. Again, I don't know about you, but I got no idea who's going to win any of this stuff, because I have no idea what a team is at this point.
Mavericks could have won last night.
It is funny. Anybody going to be honest about the fact that the reason they didn't win is the reason that they also kept it close and his name is Luka Doncic? How about this? It's hard to win when your best player has 11 turnovers. You go play the 40 points card when the dude has 11 turnovers? Like, that's what I'm saying. I said both. I said the biggest reason they were able to get this going and get it back was Luka Doncic, right? He also had 11 turnovers. And when your best player has 11 turnovers and you lose, it's on him. Yes, he scored 42 points. Donovan Mitchell scored 57 the other night in that game, right? It was 57 that he scored. But, like, I think he was a negative 17 while he was on the floor. So, like, come on now. We got to be honest about this. We can be real about it when people put up a bunch of points and acknowledge that maybe they didn't play that well. And that was the case we had with Doncic. Now, Porzingis, of course, in the ejection and all that that happened. The thing that's tricky with me with Doncic is Doncic is so good. Like, he's good in a way that it's like, it's almost impossible to overrate a guy that's that good. But every day y'all find a way, I swear for God, every day y'all find a way to overrate him. I got people, do y'all really think that he plays the same type of basketball as Larry Bird?
I mean, that just comes from the like obsessive connection with Bill Simmons, where he just loves Doncic and he loves Bird. And
but why you think the connection between the two of their games comes together for Bill Simmons or anybody else?
Tall white guys that can shoot threes and handle the rock.
Yeah, but Larry Bird went out there handling the rock like this. Like, his game was not similar to this. Like, I think you'd have a better argument maybe for comparing Doncic to like a more playmaking inclined Rick Barry if you wanted to find a white guy than you would be talking about him being like Larry Bird. Like, Larry Bird was a power forward for the first 3 or 4 years of his career until Cedric Maxwell moved on, and then they moved him out to small forward. But Larry Bird is 6'9", also, by the way, 2-time second-team all-defense player. Don't forget that part, all right? It's not, those two guys are not the same. Larry Bird was never the point guard. Larry Bird's game, honestly, has more in common with LeBron James's game than it has with Luka Doncic's game. The difference is, though, obviously, that LeBron was far more athletic, right? Like, you can't discount that part. But just in terms of how they played and where they made it happen from as playmakers, Larry Bird's more similar to LeBron James than he is to Luka Doncic.
When I said handling the rock, like, I think people see the, like, the slick passes that Bird used to make and see the slick passes that Luka makes. They just are making that.
Well, they're starting with the white, and then they just got to find a way to add anything else that comes up after the fact. Like, the thing that came up when Luka made that pass through his legs, and people, like, they'd never seen it. And then they showed all these other players in the NBA who do it, which is to say, the slick passing that you describe is slick passing that all kinds of other people do who are not compared to Larry Bird, right? And look, I understand that people are not saying that Doncic is as good as Larry Bird, right? People really, you youngsters, really out here thinking that somehow Larry Bird wouldn't be able to play in the NBA today.
Youngsters.
Yes. It's the most absurd thing that I just want to ask these guys this, okay? If Joe Ingles can play in the NBA, like, people are like, well, who's Larry Bird going to guard? Back then, Larry Bird had to guard his man with no ability to lean on zone principles. You can do that now in the NBA. It would actually be easier for Larry Bird to play defense in the NBA now than it was for him to play back then. And it would be easier for him on offense because they wouldn't be able to try to muscle him. Can you imagine trying to guard Larry Bird if you can't touch him? There's nothing that you can do. You'd have absolutely nothing, man. But, you know, it's just all this. It's the same. Alex Caruso looks like an accountant, a 6'5" accountant. But he looks like an accountant. So I put up the 70s, the Super 70 Sports Twitter account. They put up a picture of Larry Bird. They were just like, just a dopey high school kid who became a basketball legend. He was like 6'6". Like, what made him look like, do you think every white person looks dopey? Like, I feel like you're being racist right now. You know what I'm saying? I feel like you're being disrespectful to the white man. Larry Bird doesn't look dopey. He just looked white. That's it. I can say Alex Caruso looked like an accountant. Would you hire that dude to do your taxes? He don't look like nobody I'd hire to do my taxes. When hiring to do your taxes, that's all this comes down to. Damn, this reminds me. I wish we had a bubble in like 2009. I don't know if you remember this. It was either 2009 or 2010. I can't remember which one. But the Lakers played against the Suns in the playoffs. And on one side, the Suns had Goran Dragic. And on the other side, the Lakers had fellow Slovenian Saša Vujačić. And they had some kind of old country beef. I don't know what exactly it was, but these cats was facing up on the court. Like, it happened like 2 times in the series, chin to chin. I don't know what they was bringing with them from the crib. That old country beef.
That was a nasty series, too.
That's
Rod
right.
Bell, Kobe.
I would love old country beef in the bubble. Because see, the thing y'all don't be understanding about these European cats, it's a lot of Europe, baby. You don't know where these cats came from. You don't know what these dudes have seen. I was talking to a dude in the media who told me once he was talking to Zaza Pachulia. And he was like, Americans, y'all all think y'all's hoods are the hardest. You ain't got no idea where we come from, right? So, like, you remember this. Dwight Howard, he's from Atlanta, Georgia. Zaza, he's from war-torn Georgia. Not the same. Not the same. Yeah, man, let's get this bubble cracking. Can we start instigating on the internet? Like, we need more of these cats popping this stuff off on IG. Because think before, they used to pop this stuff off on IG, and then may not see the dude for a long time. Now you pop that stuff off on IG, and you might see that dude at the foosball table. Yeah. One last thing about the bubble that I noticed. I saw your boy Doc Rivers out there. His haircut's still good, but it's clear that he's got a different barber. That must have been the dude that had the hardest time. Like, I don't think anybody could have been lobbying to get his barber in the bubble more than Doc Rivers was, because Doc Rivers is asking his barber to do very, very, very precise things. Like, I feel like Doc Rivers' barber got to get some special order guards to go on his clippers, right? Like, can I get a 1/42nd inch guard, please? Because that's Doc's length. Like, right at like 1/42nd. Last thing before we move to the next topic, this is actually kind of funny during the game, where Van Gundy, who asked, because, you know, Doc's daughter is married to Seth Curry. And he asked, who do you think Doc's daughter is rooting for? You think she's rooting for the Mavericks or the Clippers? And Breen was like, the Mavericks. She's rooting for the Mavericks. And Jeff A. Gundy gave all his explanation to da-da-da and everything else. And all I'm saying is, if Callie feel anything about Doc like Austin feel about Doc, you damn right she rooting for the Mavericks. She might not root against the Clippers when they play against other teams. I got no idea.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
See, Gabe, I guess you're not at the age yet where your friends are taking their kids to college.
Definitely not.
You're not as far as you think, buddy. You're going to make some older friends. Don't forget about that part. You know what I mean? Like, technically, I could have been your friend sending kids off to college at this point if I hadn't been so diligent in avoiding any such thing, right? But I've been looking on Instagram, and I've been a little shocked. Like, no shade to the parents. I just didn't realize. Like, I just hadn't thought about it. Like, wow, y'all are really sending y'all kids off to college. Like, everything seems, and you tell me if I'm wrong here, but everything seems about the same as it was when you made your kids leave college, or when they made your kids leave college, but we're sending them right back, right? To me, this seems like a horrible, terrible idea, but they're trying to get them checks, right? You see what's going on at the University of North Carolina. They've already had to shut the whole situation down to go into all the virtual classes. I think that just about everywhere is going to reach a place where they have to go to virtual classes. And then at some point, these college towns are going to have to kick these children out. Because you can't keep them inside, man. You can't keep them out the bars. You can't keep them away from the parties. Now, I do contend this is something that can be done in these towns to mitigate the situation that I don't think the bars are going to do, which is, they can start being for real about checking these IDs. Like, I think that's a step, right? Is, come on, look, did you ever have a fake ID?
I did not, no.
Okay, so I had a fake ID, but I had a fake ID and I guess a slightly different era of IDs, which is to say one where the internet was just not so readily available. And so you could convince yourself that you could convince the bouncer that this was your ID. It's from some state that's far away. When's the last time somebody came up here from Arkansas? You know what I mean? Like, you could play that game with them. But then in the end, you ultimately realize if they let your fake ID slide, it's just because they felt like letting your fake ID slide. They appreciated you at least showing the effort, but they know your ID is fake, right? They just got to start shutting this stuff down. Like maybe that's the first step that we got, because I'm looking at all these parties, I'm looking at all these bars, I'm looking at all these places, and I'm blown away. Like, I'm just 100% blown away just looking at it like, wow, this is a horrific idea on all counts. And the bottom line is, you're not going to be able to keep college students indoors. And a big part of why you're not going to be able to keep college students indoors is, that's not how you have, like, you know, sex. Like, this is the most sexualized age range that we got. They the hottest to trottest of people on planet Earth. Think about all the bad decisions that you made at that age. Well, some of y'all well after the fact. But think about all the bad decisions y'all made at that age in the name of trying to have sex. And fellas, I'm not just talking about y'all. Because ladies, y'all was out here engaging in many of the same bad ideas as these dudes were at the time, right? All those bad ideas that you engaged in. Is rolling the dice on COVID even at the top of the list? Like, is it even really? Probably not. They're going to be out there. They're going to be trying to make it happen. And there's no way around it, man. It's going to bounce around. And it's going to bounce around within these little towns. And where we are, which is now not great, is going to get worse. Period. I don't see any way that's around that. We see what's happening with these high schools, right? And all these elementary schools, all these other places that are having to shut down. I know about enough parents like grown-ups who got kids that are like college age or in their 20s who've had to tell them for all these months, you can't come into my house because you're not living right. Like you out here in these streets just doing whatever. And that's what's going on. So while as this is going on, of course, they still out here trying to play football. And I want to say again, because I've said this many times, and I think that this is an important point for people to understand. I don't blame them for trying to play football. The financial consequences are dire in such a way that I understand why they're trying no matter what to get out here and play football. I get it, right? I just don't see how on the other end you can't understand why this looks like such a terrible idea. And see, the problem is you have to convince yourself that it is a good idea, because if you acknowledge that it's not a good idea, you also have to acknowledge that you're a selfish sociopath who doesn't care about how anything affects anybody else just so long as you get to watch these games on television, right? But everything about this spells terrible idea. And you know this. And if your best argument is, oh, it's not going to kill them, then you know this is a bad idea. That's the best counter argument that most people can muster is, it ain't going to kill them. That's what they got. And to me, that's not enough. All right? But they're going to get out here and try. Did you see this lawyer dude that's trying to figure out a way around the waivers? All right. So this guy's name is Tom Mars. He represented Justin Fields, and Justin Fields was trying to get out of his situation at Georgia. And so he talked to my man Pat Forty at Sports Illustrated and laid out a plan that he calls the Freedom of Choice for Student Athletes Initiative. All right. And so he says that college athletics is paternalistic. He normally represents in eligibility cases, right? But here's the quote that he gives to Sportico.com. The issue here is all about freedom of choice. If a student athlete can enlist in the military without getting approval from the NCAA, with the risk of death or serious injury being so obvious, why shouldn't a student athlete be free to sign a liability waiver and accept the risk of virus-related health problems? How can you hear yourself say that and not feel like an idiot? Like, first of all, the military is your point of comparison. Gabe, I thought we were supposed to be out here respecting them. I thought we were supposed to be out here honoring them. I didn't realize that we were supposed to act like football and military service were the same thing.
Yeah, I feel like the way that people try to couch the military stuff and like, oh, you know, we have to respect the military and, you know, pay homage to them at all times. Part of that comes with the notion that their lives are in danger and that they're putting their lives on the line for us, whether they're in immediate harm or not. So like to equivocate these two things is to say that, oh, well, the players are no different because they're putting their lives on the line when they get out there.
Exactly. Like, are we calling them soldiers now? Yeah. Like, is that what we're saying? And by the way, soldiers get paid. Let's not lose sight of that if we really want to treat them like they're soldiers. Now, granted, I think Tom Mars would be okay with that.
Soldiers also, if they get injured in the line of duty, are they not set up well for after that in terms of health insurance, or set up?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. They can go to the VA hospital and all that sort of thing. There isn't like a post-college football career hospital.
That's a great point.
That you can go to.
That is a great point. I am just floored that there is a lawyer who is trying to advocate for waiving your rights in case something goes wrong. What lawyer have you ever heard of doing this? Like, this makes me wonder if this dude is a plant. I'm dead ass, man. This makes me wonder. Like, this is the kind of stuff the NCAA would want you to say, right? And look, the NCAA, did you see that where the NCAA had the Zoom call last week? And apparently one of their doctors just really talked about how terrible, like, just how dire they felt that the whole COVID situation was. This was the NCAA trying to tell the other conferences, reconsider. What are you talking about? Let me make sure I get this quote exactly right that I had seen. All right, this is a guy named Dr. Carlos Del Rio from the Infectious Diseases Society of America. He did a media Zoom with other NCAA medical advisors. And this is a quote. I feel like we have hit the iceberg and we are making decisions about when we should have the band play. Here's what another doctor said. We're playing with fire. All right. This is what Carlos Del Rio also said. Controlling the pandemic is what we should focus on. This is also what Carlos Del Rio had to say. The discussions about whether we should have sports, we shouldn't have sports, really needs to be refocused on let's control the pandemic. If we control the pandemic, we will be able to do all the things we talk about, opening schools, playing sports. Like, yes, if our thing is how do we control the pandemic, everything takes care of itself. Every single bit takes care of itself if we talk about control of the pandemic. All they talking about is how do we get everybody out here to keep playing football. That's it. In so many ways, that seems so counterproductive to so many people. And now, of course, everybody want to listen to the players. Like, I am stunned slash amazed by the idea that people are viewing this like as a rights issue. Like, you are, for all the talk that every time a player gets in trouble, what do they always say about playing football? Playing football is a privilege. Playing football is a privilege. Being an athlete is a privilege. That's what they just keep saying over and over and over again, is that it is a privilege. And now all of a sudden it's a right? So what's the standard at which I can just say, I want, how you gonna tell me I can't play if I want to play? What's the standard? Like, what's the line on that? Let me know. What level of injury is there that you suffer? It's cool. I'll waive my rights. But you ain't gonna let him out there. At least I would hope not. Hell, I'm still out here hoping somebody won't let Alex Smith out there. You know, like, look, man, y'all want this that bad. I understand that y'all want it that bad. Forget about college football. Do you think that colleges are going to be open by Columbus Day?
No, definitely not.
I don't see how. And I think I told you about this. One thing I had read a few weeks ago, and I need to find it again, was the story that said that one of these things that's going to get pointed out is if you have these outbreaks on campuses and they're doing all this testing in the athletic department, student health services at many schools, including fancy ones, like Georgetown was one that they pointed out on this, are crazy understaffed. Like, they really don't put enough resources into these student health services. And that's going to create a little bit of a problem if you wind up with an outbreak at a school and you still got the football team out there. A problem, A, with the football players themselves, but B, with the people that feel like those resources could be better used on the larger student population than just on the athletes. Like, come on, man. Even if you want them to play, and I want them to play, and I think everybody would like for there to be college football, you got to acknowledge that this is just a horrible, terrible idea. And as much as the players keep saying they want to play, they've also said that they want universal health and safety protocols across the board, starting with the conference as the unit. So within the conference, they want across-the-board health and safety protocols. Not a damn one of y'all that's saying let them play is out here fighting for that. Like, if you want them to play, then stop talking about let them play and start talking about demanding better safety protocols, right? Start getting out here and hammering people like Colorado State, where we had that report where people felt like they were playing games with the test and all kinds. And we saw what happened with Liberty, where you found out that they weren't even, they said they hadn't even tested anybody in 2 weeks because nobody had had symptoms, all right? Like, if you really want them to play, then you be out here talking about that. But you want them to play, you just don't care what happens to them. And if these young kids are dumb enough, because young people are typically dumb, if they're dumb enough to say, no, nah, I'll just play, I don't care what happens, then you'll push them into the fire just because you want them to play instead of the part that you could be doing, which is helping them push for the safety protocols that they've risked a lot to try to advocate for. Y'all just some bums.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, guys. Had you ever heard of Jason Wright before Monday? Because I had not. Then I looked up and he was everywhere. Jason Wright is a former NFL player. He went to Northwestern and he is now the president of the football team in Washington. He is the very first black president of an NFL team. Yes, the very first one. This is a thing that, you know, kind of thing that makes people happy, gets them a little excited. You get a lot of, it's a step in the right direction. It's a good start. Everything else, right? So I was on the tweets yesterday morning when I saw this come down. And my man, Craig Hoffman, does radio in D.C. And I want to get to the point that he made because I responded off of it. And then, of course, it all went to hell. But he says, until recently, Washington football team senior leadership was all white men. Seems like the weakness in one of the most diverse markets in the world. Now with Wright and Julie, and Julie is, I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure. He didn't give me a last name. Now with Wright and Julie, you have voices in the room who can offer different perspectives and create a stronger brand, make better decisions. And see, I had a disagreement with him on that point, which is, I don't know Jason Wright, so I don't know what his perspective is, right? Like, if you're assuming that he's going to offer a different perspective simply because he's black, that's a dangerous game to play, right? Because, I mean, we all acknowledge that ain't all the black people the same, you know? And in terms of perspectives, you're not necessarily getting a different one just because it's a black person. And it is also worth considering that one thing that companies love to do is to hire a black person to call it diversity, but to go find a black person who actually sees the world exactly the same way that they do, right? You think when Clarence Thomas got nominated to the Supreme Court is because George Herbert Walker Bush was out here like, yeah, we want to diversify opinions. No, they were like, we need a black dude who thinks like us. And so they went and got a black dude who thought like them, right? There's a big difference between Lyndon Johnson nominating Thurgood Marshall to the Supreme Court and George Bush nominating Clarence Thomas. You see what I mean? And look, there was definitely a push to have a black person on the Supreme Court when you put Marshall on. But Thurgood Marshall and Clarence Thomas are not the same. Now, my guess is Jason Wright falls somewhere between those two guys, right? I want to be clear. I'm not calling him Clarence Thomas. I am saying that the dude was a partner at McKinsey. The same firm, by the way, they gave us Jeff Luhnow, former general manager of the Astros, and the same firm they gave us your boy Skilling, who used to be with the CEO at Enron.
Can you explain what McKinsey is for people? Because I feel like people hear the name McKinsey, but they don't actually like know what is it even that McKinsey does.
A little bit of everything. They are under the broad heading of a management consulting firm. Now, one very interesting thing about McKinsey and what makes it kind of difficult to like really say what exactly they do is that one of the good things people say about hiring McKinsey is that they're not going to claim credit for anything that they've helped you with. But they're also not going to take any blame for anything that happens when they send you out to do something. So McKinsey, I'll read this for you from the wiki. Well, this paragraph is actually unfair. Well, not unfair, but maybe a narrow look at this. But this is what the first two paragraphs of the wiki say about McKinsey. McKinsey & Company is an American management consulting firm founded in 1926 by University of Chicago professor James O. McKinsey that advises strategic management to corporations, governments, and other organizations. Under the leadership of Marvin Boer, McKinsey expanded into Europe during the 1940s and 50s. In the 1960s, McKinsey's Fred Gluck, along with Boston Consulting Group's Bruce Henderson, Bill Bain at Bain & Company, and Harvard Business School's Michael Porter, transformed corporate culture. A 1975 publication by McKinsey's John L. Newman introduced the scheme of, quote, overhead value analysis that contributed to a downsizing trend that eliminated many jobs in middle management. McKinsey publishes a business magazine, the McKinsey Quarterly, and its consultants have authored many influential books. Its alumni have held high-level corporate and political positions. The firm has been associated with a number of notable scandals, including the collapse of Enron in 2001 and the 2007-2008 financial crisis. It has also drawn controversy for involvement with U.S. immigration and customs enforcement and authoritarian regimes.
That is an unbelievable range.
Yes. They could safely be described as shadowy. But they're also one of these companies that advises you on like how to drive your stock price up. And the solution is very often fire a bunch of people. Like, that's their get down. But I mean, it's a cutthroat world that they exist in. You know, like that's who they like. They're just there to people that like do business with the government of Saudi Arabia, for example. You know what I mean? Like, this is who they are. And this is where Jason Wright is from. Right. My man Evan made a good point. It's one thing if you worked at McKinsey. It's another thing if you were successful at McKinsey. Like, this is something that Pete Buttigieg had to answer for because he's running for president And people being like, so weren't you also working on the Blue Cross Blue Shield account when they started slashing people and slashing what they provided?
Augmenting bread prices in Canada?
I'm just saying that's where this man comes from. That's the world that he's a product of. He did an MBA at the University of Chicago, which is a straight line feeder type thing to get you into going to McKinsey, where he seemed to achieve a level of success. And that, due to my inclinations about the world, leave me skeptical of the dude. And that, for me, overcomes, hey, we got a black dude. Remember what I said about The Bachelor when they went and got the black bachelor? And I'm like, yeah, you went and got a black bachelor who is just like the white bachelors. Like the whole same pedigree and everything else. That's where you went to get him. You went to try to get a guy that would sell to black people, but it's still kind of like you, right? So I remember I was talking to a professor once. Are you familiar with a guy named Henry Louis Gates?
Yes.
When Skip was the, when he was hired to be the head of Black Studies at Harvard, I was talking to a professor about it, who talked about the delicate balancing act that Harvard was doing at the time, which is they needed to get somebody that black people would respect, but that Harvard would tolerate. You see what I mean? Yeah, but they had to find something on the in-between, right? And that's what I feel like happens very often on things like this, right? They need to find a black dude that, like, black people can't look at it and be like, man, get out of here, right? You can't do that. Like, so, for example, let's just say hypothetically that a network said they didn't have any black people doing play-by-play at the whole network, all right? And they're getting some hell for it. Right or wrong, you're not going to solve that problem by hiring Mike Tirico. You know what I mean? Like, if I were to start asking people about, like real, like, pioneers in broadcasting or whatever, I'm pretty sure Mike Tirico is the first black man to be on the call for Monday Night Football, right? Like, I feel like there's probably a pretty long list of things that Mike Tirico is first black guy to insert thing here. You don't think about Mike Tirico like that. Right or wrong, I'm just saying, you can't pass him off as Black History Trailblazer. Not that he wants that, right? But you can't do that. When you pick the black guy for these positions, you got to get somebody, if you're doing it to show your diversity, which I think they did because they sent that dude all over TV yesterday, right? If you're doing that to trumpet that, you have to get a guy that black people are ultimately going to respect. But in order to get the job, you're probably going to need to be a black dude that the white folks who make these decisions are also comfortable with. And so this guy has the background that makes them comfortable, and he played in the NFL and all of this stuff, you know, so that, and so he can present as a person that black people would be cool with, right? So I get where people are coming from in large part because, and when I say in large part, I'm talking about the people who were mad at me for being like, why can't we just be happy about this? Because I've been living too long, man. I don't know this dude like that. And this dude may prove to be somebody we talk about in February for a very long time. He might. You know, he may demonstrate himself to be somebody that's really coming in there to shake up the system. However, who's the head coach in Washington now, Gabe?
One Ron Rivera.
That's, you know, some diversity there, so to speak, right? I hate the term diversity for a number of reasons, but, you know, there's a diversity there, so to speak, with Ron Rivera. How does that manifest itself in action? And look, Ron coached the Panthers for a very long time, and there may be things that I am unaware of, but it's not just about diversity and who the person is. Action is what's going to demonstrate something on this, right? Like how you actually do it. And Ron Rivera is the dude that after that report came out about Jerry Richardson's racism in the office and misogyny in the office, who dedicated the game ball to Jerry Richardson the next time they won a game.
When they were talking about replacing the...
Yep. It's going to be out of the military. Yeah. I can get a white man to do all of those things. And I'm not... And I say, I'm not questioning like whether Ron Rivera is Hispanic enough or anything like that. I want to be clear. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is he is diversity on paper, who sees a lot of things the exact same as the people who are in charge. So this is not an agent of change, right? This is maintaining the status quo. So you're going to tell me Dan Snyder, a man none of us find to be particularly trustworthy, is hiring his new president from a firm that does business that gives us reason to question whether or not they are actually trustworthy, right? With a resume that looks a whole lot like the white dudes that everybody hires. I'm just saying this dude's perspective may be like uniquely black. And the fact that he is black may in fact inform how the team does business and make it better. It is entirely possible. But I can't assume that. You know what I mean? Like, I can't just bet that that's going to be the thing that happens. And so I think what happens often, too, when I say things like this, of course, people who, like, root for the team, like, why can't you just be happy for us? But you also get white people, like, now is a time when white people want to get credit for hiring somebody just because he's black, right? Now, like, the idea of a quota or whatever it is isn't a problem. Oh, now you got one and you're never going to be happy. Goddamn, I was supposed to be happy with one? Right? And, by the way, a guy that's never run a football team. Like, you think about that part? I have no idea if this cat is going to be good at this. From what I can tell, this is the only time that he has been an executive of an NFL team. Right. So, yo, fingers crossed. Really hope this goes well. I suppose it's very possible that this could go well. But there's no way in the world that I can assume this. I can't even assume that just because they hired him that he's going to hire black people. Like, I can't. Fun fact. We have more black people like on their cabinet, George W. Bush or Barack Obama. George W. Bush.
Yeah, because you had Colin Powell.
But just even past that, Rod Page and a couple of people. He had, like, if you're talking about diversity and hiring and like bringing on black people, like one of the things about Obama, and this is in all the books about him and everything else, but like all the people that were real close around him, they was all white dudes.
Except for the body man.
Oh, yeah, Reggie Love. Right, right. You know, but everybody, but basically his surrounding crew, under like Valerie Jarrett, it was basically white dudes, right? I'm not necessarily knocking him from that. I'm just telling you that not even the first black president of the United States could be necessarily expected to put a bunch of black people on. So why am I supposed to assume this from him? So for everybody involved, let's see what he does. Let's see if Dan Snyder even empowers him. Let's say he wants to do all those things. Is Dan Snyder actually going to empower him to do those things? And look, it's possible. Say what you want about Dan Snyder, and this don't necessarily like make him, you know, John Brown, but the man's drafted three black quarterbacks in the last 15 years. Not everybody would do that. You know what I mean? In the first round, he's drafted more black quarterbacks in the last 15 years than some teams have ever had black starting quarterbacks in their whole histories, right? So who knows? Maybe he'd surprise us, but I don't know. And if we go keep up this momentum that we had, and I feel like that momentum is dying and it troubles me. But if we're going to keep up this momentum that we had, it requires skepticism in a moment like this, not celebration. Because never forget this, and this is where it's very important. The reason that this is the first black president of an NFL team, it ain't got nothing to do with black people. We did not accomplish anything. If anything, this is white people accomplishing something. If anything, this is white people reaching a point in their journey to be able to consider the possibility that a black person is qualified to be in charge of an operation. Good for you for being able to realize that, because now maybe your operations will run more smoothly because you are considering all the talent that is available. Would nobody ever consider a basketball league with nothing but white people? Although I did an interview with a guy about 10 years ago who was trying to start such a league. But I mean, obviously that would have been a horrible idea. But you wouldn't dream of that. You wouldn't dream of like ignoring all that talent. But you do it with everything else. So the problem is, y'all think we good at basketball, but y'all think we stupid. So you don't think that you're ignoring talent. But that's what you've been doing. So congratulations to Dan Snyder for being the first white man in the history of the NFL to try to give himself a better chance at winning. All it took was a whole lot of PR crises to bring you to this place. But hey, man, you made it here.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from education.
This is Lassie Meyer with Fast Company. Around the United States, throngs of college students are turning their childhood bedrooms into classrooms. Out goes the Harry Styles poster. In comes a copy of Swan's Way. Well, until now, people were willing to make do. That's changed. They're in it now for the long haul. For Bed Bath & Beyond, that's an opportunity. The home furnishings chain has launched a new section on its website called College from Home to help you overhaul, or at least spruce up, your room. There are sample setups to inspire you, like Chill Camp Vibes, Low Key Bohemian, and Modern Glam, along with design tips, a quiz to zero in on your personal style, and interior design consultations. Back-to-school shopping has always been an important time for Bed Bath & Beyond. Incoming freshmen need to deck out their dorm rooms. Hello, Twin XL sheets! And returning upperclassmen are looking to either outfit a new off-campus apartment or freshen up their dorm life necessities like storage organizers, shower caddies, and desk lamps. Despite the high jobless rate and the recent loss of the additional $600 in unemployment aid, Americans have disposable income. Spending on travel, entertainment, and restaurants is typically more than four times what consumers dish out for home furnishings and home improvement, according to Wedbush Securities. But many of those activities are on hold at the moment, and that means money used for redecorating. Bed Bath & Beyond has its challenges. The chain saw total net sales plummet 49% during its first quarter due to temporary store closures at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. And last month, it announced plans to permanently shutter approximately 200 stores in the next 2 years. Meanwhile, sheltering in place has inspired a new wave of DIY activities, and not just making sourdough bread. YouTube has numerous how-to videos for furniture refreshes, and TikTok features endless posts of college students' bedroom before and afters. Plus, with as tactile a purchase as furniture, some shoppers still want to see items in person before buying a whole new bedroom setup. And those concerned about masking and social distancing will just hold off.
So I wanted to pull this story just because I was thinking about this, right? You know how much somebody can change in 1 year? Like 1 year in college, people turn into whole new folks in the course of one semester. All right. So this is something I hadn't quite thought about in the whole COVID-19, but this happens. All right. Like I used to roll with this dude who called himself by a nickname, right? But every time we met somebody from his crib, they called him by his actual first name. He had decided once he got to college that he was now going to go by this name. Like, we used to notice we called his parents' house and we called him by the nickname, and they had no idea who we were talking about. You know, like, he just became a different person. People are often different folks at college than they are at home. But it can be harder for some people to go back to being who they were when they were at the crib. And so that is one of my favorite things about graduation, can be looking at students and seeing the ones who are now having to bridge the gap between who they are in college versus who they are at home, right? Like, I remember at one of the schools I went to, there was somebody who on the yard was pulling all the girls, but at the crib was daddy's little girl. Yeah, you see what I'm saying? She had to try to find a way to bridge that gap. You know what I'm saying? So imagine if you are that person and you've been on the yard and now you got to go back home to your bedroom that is full of all these things that you had been pretending to be, but are not actually. Like, I imagine there's been some real reckonings in some of these houses during quarantine for this very reason.
The difference, I think, when you're in class too, is that like you're on camera, but you're not always on camera. It's a lot to do for a very short period of time. Like, your total on camera time in class, if you speak up once, it's maybe like 30 seconds. You know, showtime is not very long, but you got a lot of prep time.
Yeah, nah, man. I just say people stuck in rooms that no longer reflect who they are.
Man, it's a lot. All right. This next one comes from Food and Agriculture.
Hi, this is Amanda Little from Bloomberg Opinion. For months, President Trump has been on a mission to deregulate the meat industry. Trump officials have suspended protections for meatpacking workers, lowered plant inspection standards, and relaxed pollution restrictions for chicken and pig farms. What the president claimed was a mission to improve food security during the pandemic has done just the opposite. One of the worst examples of these rollbacks came last month when the Agriculture Department's Food Safety and Inspection Service decided to allow poultry plants to process diseased chickens for human consumption. In July, this department approved a petition from the National Chicken Council requesting that slaughterhouses be allowed to process broilers infected with avian leukosis, a virus that causes chickens to develop cancerous lesions and tumors. Inspectors would no longer be required to examine the first 300 birds of each flock for signs of the disease, and processors would be able to cut off tumors and lesions and then process the rest of the bird. The approval has led to a proposed rule change that is now before the Food Safety Administrator, Paul Kuiker. Tens of thousands of chickens are condemned annually due to exposure to avian leukosis. And while it's unlikely that the virus could transfer from chickens to humans, it's not impossible. The virus can mutate, and there's some evidence that workers exposed to birds infected with the disease have developed antibodies, which indicates a transfer of the virus from animal to human. The timing of this rule change seems absurd. We're dealing right now with a pandemic that transferred into humans from an animal source, and a poorly regulated meat industry could very well become the source of a new epidemic. Whatever Big Chicken would gain by being able to process diseased chickens does not outweigh the threats to public health.
So you're telling me I basically had to cut myself off from all the people in my life, and I'm gonna have to do it with chicken too? Is that what you just heard? Because I feel like that's what I just heard.
I hadn't thought about it like that, where like COVID-19 was like an animal-borne illness that made its way into humans, and that things could happen just like that in the future as well if restrictions are kind of rolled back. I mean, that's kind of what happened with Mad Cow, right?
I don't know what it's looking like up there where you live, right? But it's starting to get real in New York, man. Like, homicide's starting to tick up. You're starting to see more of the homeless people in the streets. And, you know, they put a lot of homeless folks in those hotels, like on the Upper West Side and the Upper East Side, because they had space. And the New York Post is doing a great job of keeping us informed of what a hellscape it's becoming, right? Not quite that extreme, but I did see a picture of some homeless dude has set up a mattress in the CVS somewhere in the 70s. Look, man, it's about to get real out here in these streets. Y'all need to understand this, especially if these checks don't go out, get ready. Because if it's a food shortage game, at some point, that's going to become food shortage. We just ain't going to be able to keep letting people do this, right? Like at some point, that's going to be a thing. Everything is going to hell, man. If I can't get chicken without it in it, it's all bad, man. I'm not trying to be like doom and gloom on it, but you just told me the chicken supply is at risk. Let me tell you what they're going to start doing, too. They're going to be start selling us COVID chickens with non-COVID chickens. It's going to be like organic. Like, we know this ain't got no COVID in it. This, I mean, give it a try for like 50 cents cheaper a pound.
A higher price point.
And I'll pay it.
Disease free.
I'll pay it. I am the problem.
All right, this last one comes from music.
Hey, this is Matthew Allen, writer with The Griot, coming at you live and in living color from Brooklyn, New York. Turns out that Wu-Tang really is for the children after all. The RZA, music producer and co-founder of the hip-hop group Wu-Tang Clan, has been commissioned by ice cream company Good Humor to craft a brand new ice cream truck jingle. The goal is to replace the original jingle, Turkey in the Straw, because it has a problematic racist history. Now, RZA has said that Good Humor contacted him to create a brand new jingle, saying, quote, "We can change the dynamics. We can make a new ice cream jingle for a new era." The ice cream company has announced that it's putting a call to all truck drivers to stop using the problematic Turkey in the Straw jingle and offered RZA's new jingle to play instead, and they're releasing it for free. Good Humor says it's also going to be using the new melody in its forthcoming industry standard ice cream truck music boxes.
I am a little confused as to why the RZA needs to compose a new ice cream truck song. I don't understand. He's already got one. Watch these rap. Get all up in your guts. French vanilla, butter, pecan, chocolate deluxe. Even caramel sundaes is getting touched. Look up the video for Raekwon's ice cream. They already did this. Like, just play ice cream from the truck and everything is cool. Problem solved. Wonder if the RZA gonna, like, you know, if he come up with a new one, if he gonna code it on two levels. And one of them is for the ice cream man who sells ice cream. And the other is for the ice cream man who also sells ice cream.
Yeah, like Big Worm and Friday.
That is exactly. Look, man. Any operation that's mobile, people selling something else from the car. Doesn't matter with cable man, whatever it is. You give that person a vehicle, that is other transactions will be taking place. Pizza Man, you ever seen the movie Loverboy with Patrick Dempsey?
I have not seen that one.
He was selling himself. They called a pizza joint and asked for extra anchovies. And he'd show up. He'd show up. I almost said something that may have been going too far. I was going to say, they asked for extra anchovy. He show up with the meats. Like Arby's. It's a whole movie about it.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So students are coming back to campus. You're talking about it in a previous segment. What could go wrong, right? What could go wrong? People meeting new roommates, getting to know that experience for the first time, maybe for some people who were fortunate enough to be living in their own bedroom, not having to share with brothers and sisters. So we wanted to ask the listeners for their worst roommate experience. Maybe it led to a fight. Maybe it didn't lead to a fight. Could be in college. Could not be in college. We got a bunch of good ones. Our first one, this was one that's near and dear to my heart. The guy didn't leave his name or where he was from. I thought it was an important entry.
Man, let me tell you about the time I had a roommate. It was my first apartment, and me and my girlfriend decided to have her friend move in with us. You know, long story short, she had some issues going on at home. Anyway, she was real selfish, shall we say, and she really didn't want to help out with stuff around the apartment. So one time she went grocery shopping and she bought herself 2 gallons of milk and wrote her name on it. Pretty much said, if you touch it, there will be consequences and repercussions. Well, I'm not one to stand around and let somebody threaten me. So to prove a point, I decided to have a bowl of cereal right in front of her with the milk she bought. And she took that as a sign of disrespect, but I took her writing her name on milk that she bought for herself, and we had no plans of letting nobody else in the apartment use as a disrespect. So she decided she was going to pour the milk out, left the apartment, went down to the rental office, got her name off the lease, and moved out all within 6 hours. And yeah, luckily nothing happened physically, but yeah, she was a pretty, pretty bad roommate.
I mean, I really don't feel like there's any good guys in this story. This could have gone either way. I'll tell you this though, what was funny. So I had a roommate that I lived with all the years I was in school, and we used to buy like groceries and stuff together. And I remember when we bought the stuff together, it was like share and share alike, right? Like anybody come through, you know, like, oh, you can have this. And then we weren't buying the groceries together no more. I don't think we had a falling out per se, but he don't like me that much, right? So it just kind of wavered, you know? And so we wasn't buying them together. He was buying them himself. And then he started coming in, getting on me about like, yo, man, you've been drinking, whatever. I was like, I told him, I was like, oh, my bad, dog. I figured that since when we was splitting the bill, we were sharing. I thought you were sharing. You know, if you're not, all right, well, you know, whatever. I think it was cool, but, you know, that was the game that he played. But, you know, our relationship began to deteriorate as the year went on, and I was telling my homies about it, and then, at some point, old buddy started drawing lines on the bottles, right? Like, he's drawing a line on the orange juice bottle to where the line was before, you know? And so when people looked in the fridge and saw that, they were like, bruh, is your man really drawing lines on the bottle? I'm like, he drawing lines on. Like, I wasn't even messing with the stuff, right? I'm like, he's drawing lines on the bottle. Got it. So what did my friends decide to start doing? One of my partners walked in and was like, yo, what your man got for me to drink today? And so he go in, get the orange juice, pour a glass, and then put that water in and put that right back up to the line. And another partner, he did it with milk.
Oh my
yeah.
God.
Yeah. He's just like, whatever.
People are not good at sharing, man. People are really not good at sharing.
Well, like I said, he was really good at sharing when I was going half on it.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that's the thing is like, you have to trust A, that I'm getting my money's right. worth. And then I'm also put things back when you want to have it, all that sort of stuff. I mean, that's why people end up getting their own mini fridges, yes. right? But I had like a mini fridge in my room where I put all of my like drinks and stuff like that. But I eventually got to the point where I started putting my own bowls.
Yeah. Oh, no, I understand why people do that. Like, some people are trifling. We weren't really trifling. Like, I think that's how my man there felt. It's like, yo, we're not even really trifling. Are you treating us like this? I mean, if we can get trifling, and trifling it got.
Yeah, they need to get on the same page if they're trying to make that stuff work. This next one comes from DJ.
But third year in college, I had this guy who wasn't really my roommate, but, you know, you got the guy that's like your roommate's man, so that he's always at your room, seemed like more than your roommate. So dude was known to play too much. And in one of those instances where he played too much, he thought it was a good idea to go around with lotion, rubbing it on people's faces. Now he did it to me. And so I tell him, yo, don't ever come back to my room again, bro. So let's say next day, here he goes again. He's showing up. And dude decides to commit what I consider to be the cardinal sin of bedroom etiquette, which is to get into somebody's bed with your shoes on. Not only did he decide to get in my bed with his shoes on, he stood up in my bed with his shoes on. Decided, you know, he's just going to jump around. I guess he thought he was Dave Chappelle or something. So while he's jumping around, I guess, I don't know, it's like I saw red while he was doing it. So I decided, yo, I'm just going to give this dude the biggest push off the bed into the next bed, face first onto the floor that I can give him. So that's what I do. So dude, look up. All my other roommates, you know, they sitting around looking like they got a like nice little quiet pause going on. They all trying to see what's about to happen. And then all of a sudden, one of my other homeboys, he just look at dude's face and he just busts out laughing. So dude decides, you know, all right, I'm just going to walk away from this. Never saw him come back to my room again.
Yo, I think you let that dude off easy.
One would have expected maybe like a little bit more of a sicker landing to the voicemail. Can we get a punch? Can we get an
that
elbow?
That seemed like a perfect moment for an Arn Anderson spine buster slam.
Or even if you're going to, the bed is a little jumpy, a little springy, I can understand how a push may like accomplish the same goal, right? But can you not push somebody into the opposite wall?
Yeah, like I honestly don't know how that dude wasn't mad to the point where his attempt to just nudge did not turn into like throwing the dude through the wall. I'd have been furious.
The cardinal sin.
I mean, I thought it was going in another direction, but that was pretty bad.
All right, this last one comes from Greg in Atlanta.
The worst roommate I ever had was during my freshman year of college. He had to play music to help him sleep. And we're in the same room, and it's loud enough to where, you know, it would keep me awake. And I know the song that he played. It was a song called Let's Make Love by Silk. Now, this is kind of an inappropriate song to play with two 18, 19-year-old guys in the same room, but he would play this song, this one song, on repeat for hours to help him sleep. And I would get up, I would turn off the stereo. A few minutes later, he turns it back on and he plays Let's Make Love by Silk until he fell asleep. So, of course, I'm not sleeping very well because of all this. Then one night, I'm able to go to bed in silence because he's not there. And then I hear the doorknob rattle and I realize he can't get in. And I get up to open the door, and before I hear the door open, he says, "Why did this insert gay slur lock the door?" I stood there before the door thinking if I should say something or do something because that was completely unnecessary. So I went to open the door and he's standing right there and he didn't say anything. I don't know if he realized that I was in the room. So I just slammed the door in his face and his hand was caught in the door. I didn't see his hand. I was hoping the door to hit him in the face, but his hand was caught in the door and the door's not locked anymore, so I'm wondering if he wants to talk about it. We can talk about it, but he didn't open the door. He never came back. The next day, the RA didn't talk to me. That roommate didn't talk to me. And I come back from class, and his parents are in there helping him pack up his stuff. So he moved out. And a couple of weeks later, I meet some other people in the dorm, and some people are like pointing at me and saying, that's Shug. Apparently this rumor came about that I made him move out by holding him out the third floor window of the dorm like Suge Knight did to Vanilla Ice, allegedly. So that's what came out of it. But fortunately, I never saw that roommate again.
Wow.
That's Suge.
I have seen somebody get forced out of a window in a dorm before. This dude lived in a dorm. It was real cool, but he seemed to be crazy. And he looked just like Redman. Anyway, he was with his roommate. And somebody hit like a breaker and turned the power off on the floor. And so the dude looked like Redman was working on a paper and he lost it because it's 1998, right? And his roommate was on a long distance call. That was a big deal back in the day. So anyway, everybody's mad about this. And somehow they concluded that this dude, DJ, had done it. All right. I have no idea if DJ did it, but they had concluded that DJ had done it. And everybody runs up. In fact, I was not there that night. I have been told this story so many times, though. Anyway, they all run up outside DJ's room, and they knock it on the door. Nobody's answering. Knocking on the door, nobody's answering. Dude looked like Redman, finally like, yo, somebody go to my room and get my Tims. I'm going to kick the door down. And so, of course, somebody goes down and gets his Tims. And he gets his Tims, he puts them on and lays them up. One kick, door shakes. Second kick, boosh, we're in. And a dude who he used to call Old Face, because his face looked old, and he was sitting in the windowsill, and he goes, by the way, he is not DJ. I didn't do it. Jumped out the window. Second floor. Jumped out the window.
We used to call him Old Face.
Yeah. I can't remember Old Face's name. We used to call him Old Face. Jumped out the window. And the only other time I ever saw Old Face again, I was walking on the yard one day, and he was talking to somebody, and I don't know what exactly they were talking about, but I just remember the one thing I heard him say was, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you got people making you jump out of windows. I changed schools, too. It was a smart play. Rodney did not mean well. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassett and Tariqa Foster handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Zlati Meyer of Fast Company. Check out her story on college students doing the redecorating at the crib for Zoom. Also, thanks to Amanda Little. Check out her story at Bloomberg.com on how they might be COVID chicken in these stores. And thanks to Matthew Allen of The Griot. Check out his story on how the RZA made up a new song for the ice cream truck. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.